This is TWiT.
We love a David and Goliath story around here, especially when the David is someone who regularly makes us laugh on the internet by simply making fun of things we could never afford to own, even if we wanted to, which we don't. Last week, you might have heard the story of McMansion Hell, a hilarious blog devoted to teaching the world about architecture. The blog author was threatened by a cease and desist letter from the Zillow Group. We reached out to that author, Kate Wagner. She is here joining us to tell her story. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So tell us how this whole fracas started.
Oh, gosh. I was sitting in the laundromat and doing the laundry, and I got this email from a guy named Christopher Poole. And when I opened the email, I thought it was I thought it was Moot from 4chan, to be honest. I thought it was somebody from 4chan found my blog and was going to send me like some gore pics or something like that, and was doing so under the name Christopher Poole, which is, of course, the name of our beloved Moot. And it turns out it wasn't. That guy's actually a lawyer at Zillow. And
could be the same guy. Just saying.
That would be pretty great if it was the same guy, to be honest. Moot's really made a name for himself, you know, outside of being a professional basement dweller. But yeah, so I was terrified because this is, of course, you know, my livelihood and my income and my project that I've been doing for the last year and so devoted so much time and effort to. And I just started this new series lurking around. And anyways, it's like this whole thing was under threat of being gone forever. And that was pretty terrifying. So I, of course, in my panic, posted to Twitter being like, help me. So Zillow is starting to sue me. And I actually got over 200 emails from lawyers that day who wanted to help. That was pretty cool. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation came to my rescue. And over the next couple of days, we drafted this email, sort of going back and forth, and drafting this letter. And I mean, to be quite honest, the letter is pretty, you know, awesome. It's a pretty good slapdown as to why this is so silly. And we sent the letter, and I got the call from my lawyer that the letter had been sent, and I was going to go to the bar to drink. And so I got on the bus and to play the waiting game. And by the time I got to the bar, like 15 minutes later, Zillow was like, we're done. We're not going to touch this anymore. We're so tired of like the bad PR. We just like this. They saw an out and they took it. So it's over.
I mean, it was pretty basic, like pretty basic fair use for parody. I mean, was that something that you had considered before you started posting these pictures? I mean, had you thought at all about fair use?
Yeah, I actually have a copyright disclaimer at the bottom of all of my, like, you know, house posts that say, like, this is totally protected by fair use. Like, you know, if you want to reuse the images on your site or whatever, you can just contact me and I'm pretty accommodating. So, but yeah, it's been about a year and I've never had a copyright complaint until right now. And so the sort of professional sounding copyright disclaimer might have been why that was the case. So yeah, it was, you know, it was interesting to get this at this point in life.
So just to kind of do a little bit of like clarification around what you're actually doing, you have these images that are appearing on Zillow, and then you know they're of McMansions, and you kind of doctor them up with your hilarious kind of commentary on what they're actually including in the architecture here and why or why that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But those images that are appearing on Zillow, did Zillow own them in the first place, or were they just kind of putting them into their system and that in turn made them think that they actually had control over what you did with those images?
So Zillow doesn't actually own any of those photos. It has contracts with like realtors and local like MLSs and sort of like skims the, they're kind of like like data bottom feeders, essentially. They just kind of skim and import these listings into Zillow from other places on the internet. And so they don't actually own any of the photos. So they, even if they did own them, it's still fair use. So, I mean, that part of the argument
was
moot.
Right.
To make my pun. But the, sorry. But yeah, so the what they were trying to get me on was like the terms of service, which was interesting because I didn't actually have a Zillow account. I've been signed up for one, but through because when you send somebody a listing on Zillow through an email, they automatically create an account for you. And basically that's what the letter said was like, you know, unless there's like a checkbox that says like, I agree to the terms of use or some sort of explicit statement, like it doesn't usually hold up in court. And this was sort of the case with Zillow. So it was interesting. And then they tried to get me with the, you know, the hacking statute.
The CFAA, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
I was like, yep, I'm really abusing some computers here. By I hacked into Zillow, obviously, and stole all the photos somehow. But yeah, they threw that out. They just put in that in there to make it sound scary, like I was going to jail, like I was going to be the next Aaron Schwartz or something. And obviously, that's not the case. I'm a free woman, so.
Thank God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is just crazy that they had no sense. I mean, it's what is scary about this is how many people just take down their site. I mean, how many people that might even be, obviously, they probably targeted you because you do have such a large following. But I mean, they're probably targeting so many people that are just like, oh, I guess I stole that. I think I have to take my site down. And the people that don't turn to Twitter, that don't have lawyers following them, that can't get this help, that do feel threatened by this. And you're not, I mean, we should say also, you're not just making fun of houses. This is an architecture blog. You have a lot.
Yeah.
You, I mean, what kind of background do you have? You know, what kind of architecture background do you have?
Well, I've actually been writing about architecture since about I was in high school, just about. And so I've been doing it for a really long time, but not actually in the public sphere. I actually don't have an architecture degree. My degree is actually in architectural acoustics because I wanted to work with architects on concert hall interiors. But it just goes to show you, you know, you don't always necessarily need a degree to work on something. But anyways, I my previous line of work was as a classical recording engineer, which requires a lot of sort of, you know, spatial microphone techniques and whatnot like that. And I also worked at a speaker company for a number of years as an acoustical engineering intern. So, you know, just an interesting sort of and diverse line of work. But all sort of the while I was always sort of writing these essays about everyday houses and doing this research. And decided to, you know, originally the thought for the blog was not like, you know, the intention was not to end up to look like this. The intention was to be like, why explain to people why these houses are ugly. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of ugly house blogs. I mean, the ugly Belgian houses is a favorite of mine personally. But none of them really explain why the houses are ugly. And so unless you can sort of explain that, you kind of are just in the sort of subjective realm of you know, well, he said, she said. And there's sociological reasons as to why the houses are so, you know, awful that goes outside of architecture. But you know, just explaining these things, like the basic rules of architecture to people who, and you know, in America we don't really get like that great of an arts education to begin with, and you know, architecture is certainly not included in that. I think the only thing I ever learned about architecture formally in school was in my art class, my junior year of high school, which we learned what a flying buttress was, and everyone laughed.
You're really funny. So obviously this has been an informative experience for you, I have to imagine, as a site owner, you know, producing this content online, taking the process that you've been doing for the past year and doing something with it, and then realizing that, oh wait, you know, there's this whole other interpretation. Mind you, it didn't really result in anything concrete, but it certainly probably opened your eyes at this point to, you know, that people are watching, I suppose. Has this changed how you operate or how you plan to operate your site kind of going forward, even though there was no kind of end to this that resulted in you having to take your site down because of these choices? Like, what, I don't know, is there anything that you walk away from this experience going, I'm going to do this differently now?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to use photos from Zillow anymore because, I mean, why would they? Why would I? They threatened to ruin my life. At the same time, also, like, every time I used photos from Zillow, I put that they were from Zillow in the site, and that just obviously gave them some traffic. And they won't be getting any traffic from me anymore. So, you know, that's one thing. But other than that, I think, and honestly, like I haven't been actually using photos from Zillow for like the house posts that often, because the photo quality is poor compared to other sources.
Right.
But this was mostly for like, you know, Zillow has a really effective search engine. So I think that, you know, that was sort of like the reason why I'd used it for like non, you know, house roasting purposes on as far as writing goes. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, as far as like the content of the site is going to stay pretty much the same. I don't see a need to really radically change anything. This doesn't really change, be like, oh no, I'm just not going to do this anymore. That's not really how it's going to go, I don't think. I think it's just going to be exactly the same. I might change my copyright disclaimer a little bit, but
I mean,
it's probably going to be, you know, exactly the same.
Good.
One last question. Is it ever okay to have a turret on your house in the United States?
It can be. I mean, it's not always a bad thing. Like when the turrets are oversized, it gets a little goofy. Or like when they're just kind of attached, it gets a little goofy, especially like on certain styles. So like I think about Texas a lot when I think about this question. So in Texas, you know, they have like a lot of these Mediterranean style houses. And like, while like a small turret is going to be, you know, relatively common in sort of Spanish Revival architecture, like a big turret is just completely anathema. It's completely like, it's like almost like, you know, Victorian Queen Anne style architecture. That's just, or like maybe like, you know, Tudor style, or this medieval based English styled architecture that was popular in the 19th century and early 20th century. And honestly, like unless you're building in that style, a turret is just kind of goofy. But I can see why people like turrets, to be honest. I think people like round spaces. I think they like round spaces because in the grand scheme of things, it's kind of difficult to build a round space. It takes a little bit more engineering than just to build like a sort of square space. And so I think that the sort of unique novelty of it, oh my God, that house. that's got to be one of the worst.
It looks like a toy, to be honest.
It does. It looks like it's from The Sims and not in a good way.
I appreciate a turret because it's like you're putting a hat on your house. It's not a bad thing.
It's a nice hat. Yeah, it's a good hat.